Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
The top stories from the KCBS Radio Newsroom. This is the All Local.
It's time now for Ask an Expert. Every weekday at this time on KCBS, we're giving you direct access to top experts in various fields. Today, we're taking a look at what this administration's national security and law enforcement sphere could look like.
The Senate held confirmation hearings for Kash Patel, nominee to direct the FBI, and Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick for Director of National Intelligence. To talk about that and more, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Javed Ali, public policy professor at the University of Michigan, who has over 20 years' experience working with the FBI and Homeland Security. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Eric and Margie, thanks for having me.
So let's start with Mr. Patel's nomination to run the FBI. As far as back as I can remember in that position, you've had people who served as prosecutors in the Justice Department, or judges, or FBI agents themselves, or some combination of all three of those things. Mr. Patel doesn't seem to have much in the way of those experiences.
Well, Kash Patel he's, I think, if my memory of all the FBI directors in the aftermath of J. Edgar Hoover, who theoretically was the youngest ever when the Bureau of Investigation transformed into the Federal Bureau of Investigation in 1935. In that post-1974 landscape, I do think he is the youngest person who's been nominated for the position. He does have some of the experience his predecessors have. He's, like I said, he's younger, but he was in the Department of Justice as a prosecutor. He worked on the National Security Council in the Counterterrorism Policy Office. I was actually in that same office, although our time didn't overlap in the Trump administration. He was acting chief of staff of the Department of Defense for the last few months of the first Trump administration, and then he had another position in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. So he's got some national security experience, or a significant amount of it. He's just by age the youngest, and now it's going to be a question based on the confirmation hearing. Will he sort of make it over the line and become the actual director?
Can you give us a big picture? What does the FBI agency do?
So the FBI has been around for more than 100 years. And as I mentioned earlier, most Americans don't realize that the FBI name didn't actually start till 1935. In 1909, there was this organization under the Department of Justice called the Bureau of Investigation. So for almost 25 years, that was then the nation's premier federal law enforcement organization. And Hoover came into it relatively early in the 1920s, and again, he was young, and then that started his career in the FBI. And the FBI, most Americans probably think of it as a law enforcement organization that investigates all sorts of federal crimes, but over the last, certainly in the post 9/11 era, but even before, the FBI is also the country's leading domestic intelligence agency because it has the statutory authorities to collect intelligence on national security threats in the United States. So on any given day, in this large and complex 40,000 person plus organization, there are investigations going on about federal criminal offenses. And then there is intelligence being collected about national security threats. And then the interplay of those two worlds between the criminal side and the intelligence side, that's the sort of the complexity of the work. And if the end goal is to actually build a criminal case against someone, whether they're just it's purely a criminal matter, even a national security matter, then the FBI has to work with the Department of Justice and U.S. Attorney's offices and build those criminal cases. And then going to the role of, and there are 56 FBI field offices throughout the country too, so the bulk of the FBI workforce is actually outside of Washington, D.C. And then the director of the FBI, and Director Christopher Wray was the last one before he resigned. That is an incredibly important position because that person is in charge of this very complex organization that has all these responsibilities. The FBI director also reports to the Attorney General, and then they also report to the President of the United States. So it's an incredibly important position, has enormous authority both on the criminal side and the national security side. And it remains to be seen, though, if Kash actually gets confirmed by the Senate, and then if he is, what will his plan be for the FBI going forward?
I'm curious about some of this because, as a rule, I don't think nominees to head the FBI have gone on record with political statements before. In this case, we have had that with Kash Patel. Is that something that senators will consider and should be considered?
I mean, I am clearly not on the congressional side of things, so that's something that each senator is going to have to think through based on what they hear from each nominee. And again, nobody knows right now whether he will get confirmed or not. Usually the FBI directors try to be apolitical, even though they are appointed by a president and then confirmed by the Senate. And one of the unique things about the FBI director position, too, it actually has, at least on paper, a 10-year term, which is designed to theoretically insulate the FBI director position and the organization from sort of the political winds that could blow every 4 to 8 years. But the last person who was the FBI director for more than 10 years or had the 10-year term and then actually did a couple more years after that was Director Robert Mueller. And when I got to the FBI in 2007, I had the chance and the privilege to sort of see him up close as the director. And he was incredibly impressive. And it really was an honor for me to kind of support him in whatever small way I could. But that's going to be something that we're just going to have to wait and see. I mean, the FBI as an organization should be apolitical, and the director, even though they are political appointee, generally in the past have not been political, at least have tried not to be.
Now I want to move on to national intelligence. Can you break down what that agency does?
Sure. And as we've been talking the past few minutes, I would argue, again, most of your listeners, most Americans, have a general idea of what the FBI does. Certainly the logo and the brand of the FBI is one of the most iconic in the United States. There is far less recognition and realization of what this Office of the Director of National Intelligence does and the Director of National Intelligence position does as well. So I'll try to dig into that a little bit. So from 1947 through the attacks of 9/11, this organization and this position did not exist. The National Security Act of 1947 created new institutions for U.S. national security, but there was no singular position that stood above the rest of the U.S. intelligence community in and of itself. Actually, the CIA director under this law from 1947 was dual-hatted, not only as the director of CIA, but also the director of Central Intelligence. And as history showed, or as the decade showed, after that late 1940s period, the CIA director really, for the most part, was focused on running the CIA and not really managing the rest of the intelligence community. And then we get to 9/11. And then also Iraq war related intelligence issues. And Congress realized that there needed to be a fix to the intelligence system in the United States. And that sort of dual-hatted approach for the CIA director just couldn't work anymore because the U.S. intelligence community had gotten very big and very large. So Congress passed a law in 2004 called the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act, which created the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and then the Director of National Intelligence position. And so for more than 20 years, we've had this organization, we've had different people in that Director of National Intelligence role. And their job and the organization's job is not to duplicate the effort of the other intelligence agencies, and there's 17 or 16 other ones in the U.S. intelligence community enterprise, but it's to sort of look over them and help coordinate and facilitate and integrate the work that's already going on at the day-to-day level. So that's a very important role. And those are one of the gaps that were identified for 9/11 and unfortunately contributed to 9/11. They also have some influence and purview on the intelligence community budget. So that's another important role. And then the DNI position is the president's senior advisor on intelligence. So those are three key responsibilities right there for the DNI position. And then they're the so organization of the ODNI does different things underneath it.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So it's obvious from the questioning of Tulsi Gabbard that members of the Senate committee had some issues, some concerns.
So she, having actually worked in the office of the Director of National Intelligence, my career was very unique because even though I spent the bulk of it in the FBI, part of my FBI career was actually in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence in the 2010s. And I, just like I had an opportunity to see what it was like with FBI and Director Mueller, I had the same opportunity to see what the ODNI was like when General James Clapper was the Director of National Intelligence. And just another sort of privilege to have that insight and work for him. But if you look at sort of the backgrounds of all the folks who've been the directors of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard just doesn't have that same level of experience in national intelligence. Doesn't mean she won't get confirmed. But again, if you're comparing the folks in the past versus the person who's the current nominee, I think that's why you're seeing these questions from senators. But it just, we don't know yet whether the political math will work where she actually gets confirmed. But sort of contrasting her background to General Clapper, when I was in these different jobs in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, I mean, he had almost every job in U.S. intelligence outside of being the CIA director. So he had 50 years or almost 40 years of serious intelligence experience behind him. And again, if you match up that profile to someone like Tulsi Gabbard, she served honorably in the National Guard and a member of Congress, but just doesn't have that deep substantive background in intelligence that General Clapper did. But it doesn't mean that she won't get confirmed either. So we're just going to have to wait and see on that front either as well.
So I see parallels here with, say, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who's not actually in the chain of command, but is the president's chief advisor on military matters, DNI president's chief advisor on intelligence matters and coordinating all of this intelligence. is a job where you fundamentally help shape the president's view of the world and of actions from other nations. You have a lot of influence here about what the president sees and, more just as importantly, what the president doesn't see.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important position. Again, it's not one that's well understood outside of Washington, but having worked in the office of the DNI, and again, seeing someone like General Clapper up close, I was always just so impressed with kind of what ODNI was trying to do and what he was trying to do as the DNI. And it's a hard job, and you don't get a lot of credit for doing the right thing. You only sort of get blamed when something goes wrong. But that's sort of the reality of national security, is that for the most part, you know, there's all this work going on behind the scenes, but it's only when something happens that doesn't lead to a good outcome, like a terrorist attack overseas or some kind of surprise event, that's when people start to ask really tough questions about, was there an intelligence failure? And why didn't we know something? And if something is not working right, how do we fix it? But at least we have this office of the Director of National Intelligence in the DNI position. And I teach classes on this. I think that is a good thing. Hopefully Congress doesn't do anything to change the law and the position. But that's another sort of policy question. We'll have to wait and see on what the Trump administration's perspective is on that.
You mentioned the FBI director was typically apolitical. Was that also the case with the National Intelligence Director? I mean, I think it's an apolitical goal, I would think, to defeat terrorists and disrupt their capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, the intelligence community is almost by nature apolitical. Now, the priorities of the intelligence committee will adapt to the priorities of whomever the U.S. president is. But at the same time, people are not there in politically appointed positions. The overwhelming majority of 99.99% of the workforce in the intelligence committee are career civil servants like myself when I was in government. And when administrations change over, then it's the president's prerogative to tell the intelligence community, here's what I would want you to focus on. Now you have to figure out how to go out and actually achieve the objectives on these priorities. And those priorities can also change in an administration. It doesn't just happen as administrations swap out based on the political course events. And as crisis events happen in the world too, that's when the intelligence community has to figure out, okay, if something happens in country X, we're going to have to surge focus and capability and people on country X. And that means we might not be able to do as much on country Y. And there's a risk in that. But these are the tough choices that get made every day in the intelligence community.
Indeed. But as an example of how this can lead to incorrect or, you know, mistaken decisions, I remember during the run-up to the invasion of Iraq that members of the George W. Bush administration not trusting or saying they didn't trust the intelligence they were getting from the CIA and other places wanted access to the raw intelligence so they could make their own conclusions, except most of them didn't have experience doing that. So that's among the dangers, right? Not having professionals to interpret that intelligence.
Right. I mean, that's why you have this large workforce across the intelligence community. You've got people who are deep subject matter experts on different topics, and it's their job is to make sense of all the information that they are seeing, whether it's classified intelligence or unclassified intelligence, and don't put that burden on the policymakers to make sense of it because they just don't have the time, and then conduct an analysis about that broad swath of information and then deliver it to policymakers, either in a department or agency or all the way up to the White House or members of Congress. It doesn't mean that the policymakers are going to like the analysis, and they can ask tough questions, and they will. And that was certainly my career when I was an analyst. But I think that's a healthy part of the system. But yeah, if the system is re-architected to wear down, you have a much a much flatter intelligence committee, or there are actually less people working on it, and now you've got policymakers who are actually trying to consume all that information every day and make sense of it on their own, that could also lead to blind spots or misperceptions or analysis that's not accurate.
Thank you so much for breaking it down for us. We certainly appreciate you. That is Javed Ali, public policy professor at the University of Michigan, over 20 years experience working with the FBI and Homeland Security. You can listen to this entire interview and past Ask an Experts on the Odyssey app. Download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS radio.
Subscribe to the All Local wherever you get your podcasts and stream us on your smart speaker 24/7 by saying, play KCBS Radio.